Welcome to the Internet Advisor, the place where you don't have to be a geek to find answers to your computer and Internet questions. Each week since 1998, the Internet Advisor crew has been bringing you knowledgeable and interesting guests from the digital world and talking about the hot topics. During our second hour, we try to focus on answering your questions in ways that maybe even your grandma can understand. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts for this week's edition of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. Hi, Foster Brown here, and we have a great group with us in studio. We've got Ed Rudell, Shane Hamlin, and Cal Carson, Mr. Driving Miss Daisy Carson. Well, today we hope to help you in many, many different ways. We're going to be talking about how to buy a computer. Really a confusing things in many ways today. We're going to give you some pointers on that. We'll talk about Black Friday coming up, and our cheapskate, Rick Broida, is in the house. Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Tell you, I was so excited about all we have going on today that I got a little tongue-tied there. But it's going to be a great program, and a very particularly fun kind of thing is going to happen at our second hour. That's all I'll tell you. That's all you thought. You want to be around for that. It'll be a lot of fun. But the first hour is going to be good, too, because we got a great group of people in studio with us. Ed Rudell, good to have you here, of course, sir, as always.
Always great to be here.
And with us again, by the way, because Gary Baker is not able to be with us right now. Shane Hamlin helping to round out the team. Shane, good to
hello.
Be here.
Hello.
Hey.
Am I Gary's replacement this
week? Yes, you are. And none other than our local thespian, Cal Carson. He's so used to a stage. Where's his butt?
There you know something?
I'm sorry. I hit it on you.
Sabotaged.
If you're gone for a couple of weeks, you kind of lose track.
So you're
of
used to being on stage
here.
Now.
Now, what did you call me? A thespian?
Thespian.
You know, I went to school with a girl who liked girls as well.
No. Stop
oh,
that.
Sorry.
Stop that.
Anyway. But, yeah, it's been a lot of fun the last couple of weeks. It's been 10 weeks of rigorous training. Craig Hain is our director. He's a fine, fine individual. He's totally insane. Dave,
you want to give all the credits? Give all the proper credits.
Yeah.
He's not like he's accepting any awards right now.
Not yet. In any case,
anyway, Dave and Sandy are great to work with, and it's been a ball. And we'll be back on the stage in a few hours. And
that's right.
Now it's just crazy.
Most people are going to be hearing this later on than the weekend when this is happening. But Cal is just kind of giving credit to all the folks who are helping him with the driving Miss Daisy. Miss Daisy is the play you put on, and it was where it's at a little theater in Plymouth, Michigan.
It was at Barefoot Productions, which is in Plymouth, Michigan. And, you know, if you want to go out on the web and look at it, knock yourself out. And, I think I might be done after this one.
Well, we're glad to have you behind the microphone. And guys, this quickly touch on probably was one of the big announcements this week. Certainly rocked the world out there. And that was a certain departure at Microsoft. What did you think of the departure of Steven Sinofsky, the man behind Windows 8, Windows 7, as well as Windows 8?
Another monster's gone. Seems. I mean, really, right? I mean, he's kind of a, you know,
yeah,
a dictator.
Task manager. Yeah,
yeah.
Dictator.
I mean, just crazy, and nobody liked him. You know,
sounds familiar. Sounds like what happened at Apple not too long ago. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I wanted to say what Shane is referring to is the fact that Scott Forstall, a man who was pictured as much the same kind of personality and also way up there at Apple, was somebody who was suddenly gone. And then now Steven Sinofsky, after the launch of Windows 8, it's like the biggest person involved in it, psh, gone.
Well, he said it was for personal reasons, and everyone's been disputing whether or not there was any type of shakeup going on.
I didn't
because
hear the personal reasons thing at all.
I did.
Did you?
That's what I heard. And what sort of clues you into that is that the person that is actually taking his place was like, hey, this was just dropped onto me too, and I was given this as a temporary type of work assignment.
Julie Green.
Yeah, until something, a final replacement can be announced.
Some of you think it's kind of interesting that they have not made her president of Windows.
but they have kind of put her as like an acting person. Yeah. She was like his right-hand person for the longest time. But what's fascinating to me is both of these men, Sinofsky at Microsoft and Forstall at Apple, had been there from long way back. Forstall was a buddy of Steve Jobs, am I right?
Yes,
Cal?
Yes.
Close buddy of his. And then you had Sinofsky came in not way back in the beginning, but apparently had been working with Bill Gates quite a bit. In the initial part.
You think maybe we'll get our copies of Windows 8 now? Right?
We certainly hope so. We've gotten one copy so far. It has been a mystery to me. Really has been a mystery to me why it has been so difficult. And it's not just us, but I've been seeing this around that it's been difficult to get a lot of the promotional material you would think you would want to have in people's hands so that we're not depending on somebody else's comments about it. But that we can comment, as I will today, a little later on with my special guest, about what it's like to have hands-on with it.
My God, maybe they should take up a goofy idea. Let me see. I'm going to throw something out here. I don't know. How about sell it over the internet where you could just pull it and download it on your machine and, I don't know, let's just say $30 ought to be a good price.
All right, that's
no, no one would ever do anything like
right
that.
Right now, for people who own Windows 7, and for instance, what I was given, this is from Microsoft, and thank you very much to Laura Kumbau and the folks at Airfoil. I was given that license a little over a week ago, and it was, Cal, it was just the product key and a website to go to. And the download process was really a very simple one, much like the Apple experience. And for anybody else who does, you know, for instance, goes on and buys an upgrade right now and they have a Windows 7 machine, it's only $40. So it's like $10 more for an operating system. So essentially, Cal, that's that simple for people who can use Microsoft. But in terms of the promotional stuff,
you would think with the sales performance that they've had on it, they'd want to get that out to us in our hands a lot quicker,
I would think so. But it has been a problem. It's not like there's no problem. I don't think there's a problem with the software. Now we can deal with that later on, or even the hardware has been talked about as being wonderful, and we had our hands on. We got a feel of that, and it's very substantial hardware, like the Windows Surface RT. But and I know they're spending billions of dollars. You go on TV right now, ads all over the place for the Windows RT Surface RT, and also for the Windows Phone 8. Have you seen them?
Yes.
I mean, they're everywhere on networks, all over the place. It's just that you wish that they would allow it to be in the hands of more people so that we could get used to it, as I am right now. And to be honest with you, my experience with it has been positive. There's lots of negative things about it to talk about, as any piece of new software. I'm still having challenges with Mountain Lion.
Sure.
Some things with that.
Well, you know, I was going to say, it just takes a while to get used to.
It does, and especially because
And the greatest analogy was, when you get a new car, you got to try to find the windshield wipers because they're in a different spot.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get used to it.
Dave Stern had it. It was his. He said, get a rental car. You fly into the airport, get a rental car. Well, where are the windshield wipers? How do you turn the lights on? How do I dim this at that? Anyway.
You know, they put this little tricky thing in the glove compartment called an owner's manual, but no one ever reads them.
No, they don't. Back in a moment. Hey, thank you so much for making the effort and getting hold of our program here. The Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, along with Ed Riddell, Shane Hamlin, and Cal Carson in studio. Guys, we have got a great segment coming up in a little bit with Rick Broida, our very own gadget man, who is also the Cheapskate, fifth anniversary, by the way, of his Cheapskate column on Black Friday. And I want folks just to hang on, because that's going to be at the near the end of this first hour, and then a lot of fun stuff coming up in the second hour. But one of the things, guys, that I have noticed is that we get a lot of email, and when we have our live calls on, a lot of questions from people, especially I think now that we're getting towards the holiday time of year, how do I buy a computer? What computer do you recommend? And Cal, just before we began the segment, you had a very interesting comment during the break that you made. I thought it'd be worth repeating.
Well, a lot of times, what throws a lot of people off, and we kind of talked about this during the break, is that people buy computers 1, 2, 3, even 4 years later, or even more for that matter, and time has changed substantially. And they come in, they go like, yeah, I want to get a new computer. And they go, okay, fine, here's our new computer. And they look at it and they go like, where's the CD-ROM drive at?
Mm.
And go like, CD-ROM drive? No one's used one of those in like, you know, 20 years.
But I have a whole collection.
Yeah, and when you have that type of situation, now when you buy a computer, you have to look at it differently on what it has offered for peripherals on that computer. And then sometimes you'll have to supplement those things. You may have to, for example, I carry a MacBook Air. Mm-hmm. Well, it has no CD-ROM drive because it's slim and it's made to be compact.
Made to be lightweight and compact.
So if I have to use a CD or a DVD, I have a external device that I just plug in the USB port and I use that to work with.
So the bottom line, I guess, is that the computer buying experience now, if you haven't been there in 3 or 4 years, maybe even in 2 years, is really different.
It's entirely different.
For instance, that one fact you mentioned is that in so many computers now, especially the portable ones, you will not have an optical drive. That is the CD drive or DVD drive. Actually, DVD drive. It's been for a long time.
And that's half the reason why when I tell people, if you're going to buy a computer, your first trip, you should go to the store and see what's in there.
Excellent.
And don't take your checkbook with you. Just walk in, look around, and figure out what you want first, or your debit card.
Nobody takes checks. Are you kidding me?
Well, checks are just like debit. They just scan it, and you're good to go.
We're talking about technology. Nobody uses checks anymore.
I do.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. If I give you a check that's good for $1,000, are you going to deny it?
Well, if I know you, but I mean, we'd
that's an interesting point.
We do retinal scans now.
Do you take cash?
No, nope, just retinal scans.
Wow. All
right. Ed, you were going to say something.
They just blew my mind.
key things to help people.
Well, yes. I was going to ask, is Blu-ray drives popular in laptops or desktops now, or combo units, Blu-ray and DVD? No.
I think Blu-ray is a nice technology that had a lot of potential, but unfortunately, just like Beta was in tape, which was a nice technology that was actually a little bit better in resolution than VHS, it just wasn't popular.
But I want to watch my Blu-ray movie that I purchased.
Well, then you buy yourself a Blu-ray player. Yeah. You could get a USB power.
Or a PS3 or something.
Yeah, and just stick it in there.
Shane, at the store, do you see people?
Every once in a while, someone will come in and they'll want a portable device for travel that they'll want to play their Blu-rays in. Most people nowadays, they'll take the Blu-ray and they'll actually just convert it. Video upgrade, convert it into a file that they can put on
their
PC.
That's illegal.
And, no, they own the copy of the file. No? They're not selling it or mass producing or giving it away.
Yeah, okay.
Shane, when people come into your store, tell people where your store is. I think it's only fair.
In Sterling Heights.
Okay.
Comtech Services on Shaner.
Okay.
Sterling Heights.
So when people walk in there
and
I say, I want to buy a computer, what are some of the things that strike them first?
Well, first they have this price in their head. You know, they've got this one magic number. And when we show them some of the different models that we have out and we finally get to the price, they're shocked because they think they're coming in and spending, $1,500. Now, we can spend $1,500 on a machine easily, but a basic home-use computer, $500-$600, somewhere in there. So they're coming in now half the price of what they thought. So now they think they're getting really cheap stuff like we talked about earlier when you give them such a low price tag. And, like Cal said, they're looking for dual ROMs, floppy disks even sometimes, and that whole front face is clear.
It's gone. So one of the first things people need to know is that the whole range of what you can buy now is even better for us as consumers.
Correct.
We can get a lot more with, let's say, $500 than we could ever done before. We may not have even been able to approach a decent laptop or portable for that. Right. Now, in terms of between desktops and laptops and tablets, what are people coming in looking for, you think, still?
I thought the tablet thing would kick, just go crazy. And they're not. I don't get as many a lot of laptops. I think laptops are taking over desktops.
Yep.
Right.
But when they come in, the first thing I always ask them, well, what are you doing? Are you going to be just sitting home reading email? Are you going to be mobile? Facebook, Pinterest.
So how do you want to use your computer?
Are you a gamer? And I mean, I'm not talking like online games like on Facebook, but like serious games like Call of Duty and World of Warcraft and those kind of, are you that kind of gamer? Because there's certain things I need to know to get the system that they need.
Now, you're saying something very important, not just to plug your store, when you go into a store with knowledgeable salespeople, and I think that's really important to me at least. If I go into the Apple store, one of the things the people there know what they're dealing with right now, like your daughter, Cal, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's two things that I go with when I go buying anything for that matter. Number one, you want to deal with a reputable institution that you're going to buy
from. So brand is important.
So I think it's important. Okay. And the other thing that's probably even more important than that, ask your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, your coworkers.
Personal recommendations.
Where do you buy your computer
Excellent.
At? You know, can you refer me to someone who knows what's going on with it so that I'll have an experience that is satisfying and I'm not in there and there's a guy that's either A, just an order taker, or B, worse,
exactly.
the sort of guy that's looking at you going like, looks like Rudell's got about 1500 in his pocket.
Yeah, commission.
I'm going to make
working
sure to get
commission.
All 1500
I really am leery when I'm in a place where they're working on commission.
No, yeah. and a lot of places won't even, you know, they'll say, we're not on commission. We're on spiffs, but we're not a commission. You know, we might get a little check from Lenovo or HP or somebody, you know, and that's the thing when someone comes into a store like mine that's a family-owned business, I have time. This is not a come in and, here you go, have a nice day, the register's up there. This is a long process. It's like almost like buying a car for me because I have to go.
Good
spend
analogy.
A lot of time with my customers. This is a half hour, 40-minute thing.
To be fair to the other places that are out there, you're mentioning something very important, where you buy the computer as well. Because they could go online.
Correct.
And some people decide, I'm going to go online. But the advantage of going to a smaller business, anybody's smaller business, it's a hardware store, wherever you want, is you get knowledgeable people who will take their time with you because they want to build a relationship. They want a customer as much as they want to sell a unit.
Are you talking about personalized service? What a nice touch.
Well, the thing I was going to say is store return policy, and are you going to continue having a relationship with that store if something goes on?
Okay.
The other thing I was going to say is, what type of warranty is offered by the manufacturers of the computer?
Amen.
Is it a 1 year, 90 day, whatever?
And by the way, I got to say this. Shane, from your experience, who's got the best warranty out there right now?
Oh,
other than like Apple, which
I don't want to make this seem too easy. let me think about Lenovo.
Really?
Yes. Lenovo. Okay.
Lenovo.
Because Dell always used to be the one that was like top drawer for service, et cetera. But from your experience?
Crazy thing, when I mention Lenovo to people, they go, who? It's
exactly.
IBM.
Used to be IBM,
yeah. Now they've combined, and Lenovo does the computers and desktop. So, but great, great warranty. The best out there.
Apple also has AppleCare, a year of complete service, and they got their stores as well.
Their year of service is exceptional. And, you know, if you want to buy additional service, you get a good deal on it.
Exactly.
As well.
Eddie, one other?
Yeah, the other thing, if you really want a good experience, max out the memory. No.
Exactly.
And maybe even the hard drive
more
space.
Than you possibly can need.
Oh, yeah.
So what are we talking about, guys? 4 gigabytes standard?
That's standard.
That's
minimal,
standard
I think.
That's minimum.
Yeah. I'm with Ed. That's minimum now.
Exactly.
You can't have...
And Gary said that a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, there's four principles to computers as far as I'm concerned. Can't have too much memory. Can't have too big of a hard drive. You can't have too fast of a processor. And you can't have too big of a screen.
Right.
But I will say, with some of these processors like the i3s, the i5s, the i7s, DDR3, which is the newer memory, 2 gigs runs really well on Windows 7.
Yep. Yeah. And the last thing I was going to say, if you're getting a notebook, consider solid-state hard drives or hybrid hard drives.
Hybrids, yeah.
This could be a show in itself, guys.
It really could be.
Because
we just scratched the surface, and we want to tell you this, and we did this kind of as a teaser. On our homepage, there are three great sites that are listed there. The CNET laptop buying, tablet buying, and how to buy a computer from TechSpot. Back in just a minute to talk about failed Detroit. So glad that you decided to get hold of our program and make it part of your life. Whether you downloaded it from a podcast or you subscribed to iTunes and found us there, glad to have you with us. And by the way, we have both hours available on this podcast, both first and second hour of our program. And I hope you, because I know it with some of our affiliates, you don't always hear the second hour. And it's going to be a lot of fun in the second hour. So please do. If you haven't got that, download it and enjoy that part of our show as well. Well, somebody who is a very special part of our team here at the Internet Advisor is Emily Hay. Emily is the president of Hay There Social Media and is also our social media expert. Emily, how you doing? Have we got you, Emily? Did I somehow miss Emily? I have Emily on the air, and suddenly, let me try it again. Emily, you still there?
Hey there, Foster. How are you doing?
Now we have you.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. Good to have you with us. Emily, so good to have you here during the holiday season. How have things been going for you?
Oh, thank you. Everything's great with me. I'm just sad not to get to see you guys in person.
Oh, and you are a sight for sore eyes, I might say, and certainly add to the atmosphere around here with all these gnarly fellows in studio. But you have a very special appointment with us. We usually have you on once a month to talk about some social media things. But a while back, you sent me an email about a fellow that you had met when you made a presentation. And I would like you to present that particular gentleman to our audience right now and have him join our conversation.
Yes. Well, thanks, Foster. And I'm so excited to be able to tell you a little bit about Brandon Helderop. So I met Brandon a couple of weeks ago at a Tech Town event, and Brandon struck me right away as a pretty positive person and really someone with outside-of-the-box ideas. So he told me a bit about a website that he was behind called Fail Detroit. And as you might be looking right now, you know, I kind of looked at him a little bit confused. And then when he proceeded to say, well, would you be interested in contributing to this site, I went from confused to almost nervous. So in all seriousness, though, hearing what Brandon's goals are for this project, and as a person that, you know, generally feels like life is too short to fail at everything on your own, you know, learn from others, I was very honored to have the opportunity to share a personal failure story on his site, Fail Detroit.
That's wonderful. Brandon, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
I've got to tell you, one of the people, when I said, I mentioned the website Fail Detroit, and he said, what do you mean, bail Detroit? Like bail out?
You know, we get that type of reaction quite a bit.
Yeah, people
I don't know if it was strategically named like that. It just kind of happened, but we definitely get that reaction quite a bit. It's kind of funny.
What's the concept behind something with that, if you will, negative a kind of title?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, when we started it, we really noticed that there's a lot of websites out there that are doing a great job of just promoting the startup community and different stories that are happening around Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to come up with an idea that really flipped that idea upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't want to be a Me Too website. And so out of that was born this idea to really promote people that really go through the ups and downs. And right. Out of that really came Fail Detroit. And basically what it is for anyone that started a business or really tried to do anything spectacular, you realize that you have to go through the ups and downs along
right.
the way.
Right.
It's part of the process. It's not all rosy. It seems like from the media sometimes we see what looks like overnight successes.
Yeah, we only see the wave tops. We don't see the troughs that people came through.
Exactly. But there's a lot of thorns that happen along the way. There's a lot of lessons that are learned, a lot of experiences. And we wanted to create a website that highlighted those. They're not bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people out there that we think they've been an overnight success, but really they've gone through those experiences, and
yeah.
it's made them more successful and really better people as a result.
Brandon, you said we. You've been saying we as a plural. Who mm-hmm. was in on this as you developed the idea?
Yeah, there's three of us. There's myself, there's Will Bosley, and Anthony Montalbano.
Okay. Are you from Detroiters?
Yes, all okay. three of us are.
Okay. So the idea of is that you showcase people talking about the fails that they've had in their lives, the
mm-hmm.
the disasters that have turned into something else. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Each story is broken up into three parts. First of all, you have the attempt, whatever they are attempting to do. You
mm-hmm.
have what we call the fail,
mm-hmm.
or what went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And third, really is what is the most important thing, is what lesson was learned in the process of that failure.
Hmm. Emily, you got involved in the article. Well, so tell me, what was your story? I just was fascinated. I went to the site, and there you were.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. And like Brandon said, I think their formula or format, you know, for these stories is relatable to anyone. So regardless of the story, like Brandon said, if you're a business owner or if you're maybe you work for a large company, we've all gone through some sort of personal failure
mm-hmm.
and we've become
mm-hmm.
better from it. So I talked about, you know, my attempt just with exploring outside-the-box opportunities. And for me, one of my what went wrong, and I know you can read the whole story on faildetroit.com, of course, is that I was interested in getting into a business that required upfront capital. And I didn't have any upfront capital, and I didn't feel like going the traditional routes of loans and ways that a lot of people traditionally do. So I summed it up with some lessons learned about ways that you can bootstrap a company, and that's really what brought me to Hey There Social Media today.
That's pretty cool. Cal, you had a question.
Well, perhaps maybe I read the article a little bit faster than I should have, but do you ever have any articles on there where, okay, I tried, I had a problem that went wrong, and then there was a success behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're A lot of the stories are that way. I mean, we've had several stories that here's the problem that went wrong, but as a result of this, and those stories are great as well. and they're very encouraging. There's a lot of people out there that may be going through that same struggle, whatever that is, or maybe they've experienced a similar failure. And we've had stories that this is what that failure led to.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's inspiring to read.
I was going to say, just one of the titles of the one just before Emily's was We Screw Up Together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was by Leslie Lynn Smith, who is the president and CEO of TechTown, where you guys are talking down there. All right. Any particular ones that have been? I'm sorry, Cal. You had a question.
Yeah, no problem at all. So is the process to have this blog to gather all this information as a town hall, a dumping spot for folks to put this type of information, or do you plan to do something with this collective information and move forward with it?
Right now, it's an online community for people to come and share, and hopefully through it, we can be. An encouragement to people that are maybe trying to build a business or trying to make an impact in Detroit. And I think if we can encourage people to come up with new ideas, and I think the element of failure is always – the element of fear of failure is always going to be there.
Mm.
But if we can encourage people to just push through it and come up with new ideas, and, I mean, innovation is a good thing, especially when you have all the opportunity that's available in Detroit right now.
What was your story?
My story was actually, it's funny, I'm on the radio right now, and it was actually a public speaking failure. And it was just one of those things, it was a public speaking failure gone wrong.
Uh-huh.
And actually the first three stories were Anthony Montalbano, my mm-hmm. story, and Will Bosley. And we wanted to show people that, we're not just looking for other people's content.
Mm-hmm.
We go through failures as well, and that's really what our goal was for the first three of us.
Now, you started this when?
I believe it was July.
Yeah, it looks like July is the first story that I've gotten back to. And how many stories have you had in now?
I'd say about 25,
mm-hmm.
20, 25 in that range. Yeah. I don't know the exact count.
Yeah.
Anybody of any celebrity-type note have subscribed to your process, or are you looking forward to that? I mean, it would be really great to be able to see something in a blog form from, some of the bigger names in the business world to talk about some of the failures they did. I mean, like a Mike Gillage or something like that. But something in a condensed form where I don't have to read an entire book. Any idea about maybe soliciting those type of people just to, give it some extra flavor?
Absolutely. We've had, I don't know if you notice as you're reading it, we've, through the process, been able to get the word out about Phil Detroit. And we had Emily was our last story.
Mm-hmm.
We had, like you said, Leslie Smith from TechTown. We had Alexis Wiley about a month and a half ago from Fox 2.
Mm.
And we're actually working towards that and trying to get the word out about Phil Detroit to some of those more bigger names in Detroit that are really out there on the front lines making it happen. So that's something we are working on. We have a few things in the works, and I can't say anything right now, but hopefully down the road.
You can tell us what you have to shoot us. I understand.
Yes. You will see, hopefully down the road, some of those stories.
Or it will be another story of a fail, going on from there. Go ahead, Emily. Go ahead.
You know, Foster, you just to dovetail on what Brandon was saying there, is that as you all know, that what he's working on here is just incredibly relevant to the area.
Yep.
So I think Detroit, right. We're really picking up that entrepreneurial momentum, and it's no longer just those of us who live here in the city. You know, right. The word is getting out.
Good.
And I think that with an entrepreneurial mindset comes the comfort in knowing, I've got to fail. I've got to fail hard.
And
I've got
to
fail fast.
Fail well. That's the idea. Thank you once again for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown with you. By the way, our homepage, internetadvisor.net, is a wonderful wealth of information. If you bother downloading the podcast here, or if you subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or one of the other services out there, please do make a point of getting to the show notes, because there it's loaded with all sorts of goodies. Websites, for instance, like we talked about, how to pick your next computer and some of the things that Ed and Shane and Cal were talking about, some great hot links there to different kind of sites like how to buy a laptop, tablet, or how to buy a computer in general. But there's also a link in there to one of our favorite people, and that is to Rick Broida. Now, Rick is here as the Gadget Man, and I know I missed his last appearance here, but he's also somebody who has been around for a long time as the Cheapskate. That's his blog on CNET. As a matter of fact, Rick, you just finished celebrating the 5th anniversary, I understand.
That's true. I can't believe it. I've been doing this for 5 years.
Congratulations. You've been squeezing the buffalo till it mooed for that length of time. Nicely done, sir.
Thank you.
Well, you have some help for us on Black Friday, which is coming up. That's that day after Thanksgiving, which probably a little less important since bargains are around a lot of times, but there's a big concentration of some good deals, and you as the resident cheapskate has some advice for us on that.
That's true. Well, you know, I've always been, kind of a skeptic when it comes to Black Friday, just because there are so many great deals all year round. And that's really what I do on the Cheapskate, is give everybody the deal of the day. And there's always great stuff. But this Black Friday, I'm actually kind of surprised, because I've been perusing some of the ads that have, quote unquote, leaked early from the stores.
That's funny.
I love it. Accidental leak. And I have found five that I think are really pretty amazing deals, almost to the point where it's almost worth going and spending time in the freezing cold lines and dealing with deal-crazed crowds. So what do you think? You ready to hear some of these deals?
Fire away. Even though the skeptic's in here, Shane is shaking his head.
No, I wouldn't stand in the cold for anything, buddy.
All right, well, I'm gonna start small. So if you have a Radio Shack near you, they have a 32-gigabyte SanDisk flash drive for $9.99.
Oop, gotta have that.
Kind of amazing. I mean, now that being said, you can find a 32 gig drive for as little as $17-$18 right now.
Right.
But under $10 for a 32 gig drive, that's pretty amazing.
I'm upgrading.
I'd take a $20 bill over there and get a couple of them.
And for SanDisk, I mean, quality. You know, we're talking, you've got to have a name brand product with these things, or they don't last.
That's a good point.
Are you willing to wait in line for something like that?
Nope. You know, I may go there after I swing through Best Buy first, and then I'll go to Radio Shack.
Well, it's interesting. Best Buy isn't in this list, but keep on going. I will ask you about that.
Okay, so next up at Target, they have, I'm going to talk about an e-reader here, and there's certainly a question to be had as to whether it makes sense to even buy an e-reader these days now that tablets are getting so cheap. But that being said, Target will be selling the Nook Simple Touch, which is a touchscreen e-reader, for $49.
Wow. Yeah. Now, that is pretty, I mean, that's just an e-reader, but it's also got some other functions to it, doesn't it?
I think you can do a few other things with it. Okay, I'm not sure about
But essentially, it's an Nook e-reader.
Right. Yeah, okay. Let me ask you this question, Rick, while we go down the list. Limit, or can I buy as many as I want?
You know what? That's going to vary from store to store, and I think usually if you're able to even get one, it's pretty good, because you're going to be dealing with a lot of people who are jostling to get that same deal. So I would be willing to bet that any one of these doorbusters is going to be limit one, but hey, you never know.
Okay, and marching along then?
Okay, so over at Office Max, you can get a 2-terabyte USB 3.0 hard drive for $64.99.
Oh, my word. Yeah. 2 terabytes.
Yeah, usually a 2-terabyte drive these days is going to cost you at minimum probably $90 or $100, and that's for a USB 2.0 interface. This has the much faster USB 3.0 interface, so I'm liking that.
You mentioned, by the way, in the article, you haven't, the brand is HGST Toro. You haven't heard of that before, have you?
I had not heard of that before. Apparently, they're a division of Western Digital, and from what I've heard from a handful of readers, it's actually a pretty well-respected brand. It's not some like cheap knockoff brand. They're supposed to be pretty good.
Wow, 2 terabytes.
Now, here's the caveat that most tech people need to watch out for. Not tech people, but buyers. And no shot against Broida, because he's giving them a great tip. He's giving them a great tip.
Here it comes.
No. This one is real simple, and you'll agree with me. Make sure the device that you're going to hook the 3.0 hard drive to can accept USB 3.0, or else you're not going to actually get the speed you're looking for.
That is very true. You want to make sure that your PC has a USB 3.0 port. Now, that being said, USB 3.0 is backwards compatible, so if it doesn't, it won't mean that the drive is inoperable. It will simply mean that you won't get that speed.
Yeah, you won't get the throughput. Yeah, you won't get the throughput, but you'll still have the storage. It'll just take the same speed as it would with a USB 2. Okay, and so we got 3 down. RK, what are some of the other ones then?
Okay, so the last 2 I have are both TVs, and the first one is at Kmart, where you can get a ProScan 50-inch HDTV for $288, which is just off the hook.
Yeah. You could paper a wall with that.
Did he say LED or LCD or plasma?
Now, that one is an LCD, so it's not LED backlit. So it's a, and it's a, I believe, a 60 hertz refresh rate, so it's a fairly low-end TV. But, you know, if you're just looking for something that's going to go in a den or a rec room or something, you're not, like, totally needing the best possible picture you can get.
That's for me, because I still have tubes in my house. I still have cathode ray tubes.
You still have TVs that run on kerosene, man.
Rick, you mentioned one thing, by the way, in your article, that this thing has gotten some pretty good reviews.
Yeah, actually, the this particular model, now ProScan obviously is not one of those big household names, but if you look around a little bit at this model, I think on Amazon there were some, or maybe it was on Kmart's site proper, but the reviews were fairly positive for what is, you know, typically regarded as a low-end TV.
Mm. Now, speaking of TVs, a little more recognizable name is Vizio, and it's interesting that this is the last place that you're talking about, because Walmart is where I thought we would begin.
Well, I kind of wanted to save the best for last, because this is actually, this is another TV deal, and I'll explain why I love this one so much, but Vizio has a 60-inch, if 50's not big enough for you, a 60-inch HDTV for $688. Now, that price relative to the 50-inch may not seem so great, but let me just tell you real quick what the deal is about this model. This Vizio normally sells for $999, which already is a spectacular deal. But check out some of the specs. It's LED backlit. It has a 120 hertz refresh rate. It has built-in Wi-Fi and a whole mess of apps, just like a Roku box. So you can stream Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Instant Video, and the whole works. It is, and I've actually got one in my house right now for review. And for that price, I'm telling you, there is no better TV deal to be had on Black Friday.
And just think, if you don't get the TV, just being there, you're going to get a great viral video, right? I mean, they're going to go nuts getting this. They're going to go nuts trying to get this.
Oh,
you know, I actually have to say this, and this is really terrible, but I do need a 60-inch. But my God, it looks like I'm going to be standing out there with the rest of the madness.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have to bring a friend, though, because this is a 60-inch.
I got a forklift.
Be standing in line with a forklift idling away, huh? Mm. Oh, my word.
You know, now the other cool thing is that Walmart, I think, actually this year is doing something where they say anybody who's in line at a particular time will be guaranteed to get some of these doorbusters, and I think this is one of them. So even if they run out of stock or something like that, I think they're going to give you a rain check. Now, you'll want to check with the store to be sure, but I think if you go there, you can be pretty well assured of getting this deal.
Now, isn't this the year? I mean, they started this last year, I think, but they're actually opening at midnight now.
Some stores are opening at midnight. Some stores are actually opening it at 8 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh,
I think Target
Lord.
Is doing that. It's getting, you know, eventually we'll get to the point where Wednesday is Black Friday.
Exactly, exactly. Rick, I want to thank you so much for being here with us. Rick Broida is not only our gadget man, but he's also the Cheapskate, and he's got five great deals there. You'll find a link to that story, by the way, the five best Black Friday deals he's ever seen. You'll find it on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Have a great holiday, Rick.
Thank you. You too, guys.
All right. Take care. That's Rick Broida, our man. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We got a real fun thing coming up in the second hour of our program. Please do stick around for my wife is going to make an appearance, and we're going to be talking about Windows 8. You don't want to miss that, and no, I'm not sleeping on the couch.
Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Or put your question into one of our forums. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team for the second hour of our podcast.
Hi, this is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Ed Rudell, Shane Hamlin, and Cal Carson. We've got a great second hour of the show for you. We're going to be talking about some of the challenges that our listeners have faced and questions they've sent us and get some answers to them. And we'll be talking with a brand new Windows 8 user, whom I know pretty well. We're talking about her experience with her first week with Windows 8. All that coming up on The Internet Advisor. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us for The Internet Advisor, second hour of our program. And when we're on the air with our live broadcasts on our flagship station, WJR 760 AM in Detroit, this is the hour that we take live phone calls. Now, obviously, because our program was preempted on our flagship station by Michigan State University football, we are doing these podcasts. And by the way, we continue doing them every week long. So if you don't happen to hear us, you're used to hearing us on WJR, don't worry, we're still doing a program and having some great guests on. We've been talking today in our first hour already about Black Friday deals, some incredible ones, about a unique website in Detroit called faildetroit.com, and this hour, and also about buying your computer, how to go about doing that. This hour, we're going to be talking about Windows 8. And talking with somebody very near and dear to me about the experience of her first week of using that. She was kind of a victim of that. Now, I know, Ed, you have used Windows 8 in the preview, right?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
And it does take a little bit getting used to.
We should say that, and I don't know, Shane and yes. Cal, have either of you had a chance to have hands-on with it yet?
Windows 8?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What was your initial experience? I want to kind of get this out before we bring my my wife into this conversation. Go ahead, Cal.
Oh, my initial experience was walking by and seeing a sticker on the side of a computer. I have not had a chance to
You haven't had a chance to be on it. Okay. What was your
you
first
experience? I'm a Windows guy. I love Windows. I love Windows products. I had no problem with it. I think it's there's little things, you know. The Explorer's a little different.
Very much so.
But the upgrade process, beautifully. Perfect.
That didn't take much. I mean, no. There was a download that took about half an hour. I walked away as it was downloading. And I think, matter of fact, I talked about this before. The process, folks, is very simple. You don't have to go buy anything physical. Mm-hmm. It's much like the Apple experience, Cal, where you just go to the website, the upgrade website, Windows, and then you have a product code that you buy, or you buy the product. They send you a product code. You download the upgrade, and you have to have Windows 7, obviously, for the upgrade on it. And then you would simply download the file. You enter in your product code, and you're on your way. That's very simple.
And how long did it take to actually do the install?
Two stages was the download stage. You walk away, and it took, I think, with my connection, which is a pretty decent cable connection, 30 to 40 minutes, I think, to get all the files down on the computer, then to install. The install process itself, because I was migrating our desktop, which had Windows 7 Ultimate on it, and mainly all of Jenny's files, and then my user files on it as well. It didn't have as many on it. But that took about 45 minutes, and I think there was maybe only one or two times that I intervened in the process at the beginning, maybe once. And then after that, it was all done. You just walk away from it, and it installs. And then when I came back, I had some decisions to make about the appearance and some things like that.
Did you go from 7? Did you go from 7 Ultimate to 8 Ultimate?
No, 8 Pro.
No, just 8 Pro. That's all.
That was what I had the upgrade to, and that's what we went to. I don't know. There are some tweaks that I think are more enterprise behind the scenes in that.
So your wife is a pro user.
Right? Oh, yes. We're keeping her on hold right now because I want her to be able to comment to this. But before we did that, though, I wanted to talk about what your guys' experience has been. Was it a steep learning curve for you as a tech? Now, I'm talking to somebody who's an experienced tech, Shane.
No, I mean, it wasn't bad at all. I personally don't understand the Windows 8 thing. I think they were doing just fine with 7. I don't know, you know, I didn't understand why they had to go to 8.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's some reasons behind it. Yeah. I'll talk about it in a minute. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, and as a tech, I was able to figure out by using hotkeys or whatever where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do.
The most important one for text being?
How to get to command.
Windows X. Yeah. Windows X. The Windows key X will bring up that whole line of things.
Yeah, and I think asking us three here is probably a bad deal because for two reasons. Number one, because we're a bunch of bitheads to start off with. But even more important than that, I think we all have an open mind. You know, if something new comes along, say, hey, let's take a look at it. We want to find out what's going on to it because we know we're going to be dealing with it.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest thing that people have to have when they go to a new operating system. And it doesn't matter whether it's Windows 8 or OS 10 or any of the ones that are out there. You have to go into that with an open mind. If you go in going like, well, this doesn't act like Windows 95, you're not going to feel or embrace that relationship. Right. If you go in with an open mind and then you find difficulty with it, then in that case, then maybe it's not the operating system for you. But if you go in with open mind, you got a better chance of being able to embrace the new operating system and work with it.
I think that, Shane, you were talking about why do they do this. I think that Windows had to do something this radical. Now, the path that they've chosen to do this, there's a lot of commentators who are disagreeing with it. Everything from saying they should have taken the Windows phone system, which is working very well, and just pushed that into the tablet and gone from there. There are a lot of things under the scene. I don't know what a kernel is, but they work with the Windows NT kernel now, apparently, across all their platforms, right? The phone, the tablet, and the PC are now all working. Wherever version of Windows 8 you have, essentially, is working off this kernel. And the kernel is, help me?
Kind of the root and the basis to the operating system.
Yeah, the foundation.
Basic foundation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the foundation is now the same across all of them. Yeah. The other thing is, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if you were around for it, Shane, the appification.
Yeah.
In other words, the whole mobile wave that's gone on has drawn everybody, whether you're using Android or an iOS device like an iPhone or an iPad, and now Windows Phone and the Windows, we're all using applications, these little pictures have now become much, much more important. Windows is moving that way. And as a matter of fact, heard an interesting comment on MacBreak Weekly today by Andy Anatko, great commentator, one of the fairest ones, I think he said, is that Apple is actually kind of falling behind because the whole notion of these little pictures giving you information instantly, which is what Windows is doing, is really the direction we're moving in. And Android, in some ways, is doing that as well. Back in just a minute to talk with the newbie, my wife, and what Windows 8 has been like for her. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Ed Rudell, Shane Hamlin, and Kel Carson in studio. And we've been talking up to this point about this hour we spend helping our listeners by answering some of their questions. And I thought this week could be kind of instructive to have somebody on who has spent a week now with Windows 8, who is not necessarily a tech person. Somebody who was like a tech expert, and that is none other than my own dear wife, Ginny Brown. Ginny, glad to have you on the show finally. Can I get her on the air with me? Did I push something wrong? No, I think I have you there. Okay, Ginny, there?
Am I here?
There you are. I can hear you now. How are you doing, hon?
I'm fine.
Thank you very much for joining me on the program. You often are just kind of waiting at home, either listening to the show or waiting for me to get back from taping a program. But this time we want to have you on as somebody who is not an expert or a tech person to talk about what the experience has been like of having Windows 8 on your computer. It was something that happened to you, didn't it?
Yes, because I would never make a change. My feeling is always, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
That's right. But unfortunately for her, when her husband is somebody in a program like this, she gets to be the guinea pig along with all the other people. Now, Shane has had an experience working with Windows 8, and so has Ed, and I, you and I have this past week. What were the first things that struck you about Windows 8 when I put it on the computer and said, honey, come in here and take a look at this?
Well, it's very colorful, and there are all these little squares with things in them that I can apparently do something with. I only know how to do three of them, I think.
Okay. Which three are the ones that you know how to use?
Well, I know how to get my email, and I know how to get Facebook, and now I now know how to find my contacts.
Okay.
And I can see that there are others, but I haven't. Let's see. There's one for a couple of them for maps. There's one for movies, and I have the weather and the time up there, which is nice.
There you go. Cal?
Well, then I just have to ask you the question that's most important more than anything else.
Uh-oh.
And that is, are you happy with this experience now?
I'm pretty happy. You know, there's always a learning curve for me. It always takes me a while to get adjusted. By the time I get adjusted, my husband wants to do something different.
That's terrible.
Is it a much better system than the one you were previously using?
I wouldn't say much better. I would say it's fine. It's a little better. The thing is, I'm a poor judge of this because all I really do is email and Facebook, and occasionally I have to look something up, get some information, or get on a website. But other than that, I don't do any of the other things.
Well, how about something as simple as printing? So you use these three to five apps. Is that the same for you? The experience the same?
Have I printed anything? Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, if I printed something, yes, yes.
And there was nothing. And by the way, there was nothing I had to do to make that happen. Just the print drivers are right there.
Well, the reason why
it printed the same as always. I clicked a little print icon. And it prints.
Well, the reason why I ask is I was talking to someone a little bit ago about that because they had some difficulties with the printing. Mm-hmm. And they said to me, it was a tech person, who prints? And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm always printing. I need that physical copy. Plus, I work for a company like Hewlett-Packard who makes most of their revenue from selling printers. I'm going to print.
I print every day, probably a few times a day.
Yeah,
quite a few. I get things that I need to print.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm going to a meeting Monday, and I'll print off the directions because I don't have that thing, that fancy kind of phone. So I'll just print them off, and I'll have them in my purse, and I'll look at them.
That's a great example.
Shane, what are you going
to say? No, I'm just you know, talking about, well, I can do Facebook and I can do my email, so then you're fine. That's it.
Yeah. We were talking about this, Ginny, before, about how do you pick a new computer. My contention is, and Shane, this is part of why I want to respond to your question earlier on about why do they make the change. I think that most people, of the percentage of people who use PCs and computers, want a simple experience.
Mm-hmm.
They only want three little buttons that work for them or three little tiles. Now, Ginny, you mentioned the movie tile that's on there now, right?
Yes, I see there's a movie tile on here. Yes, I haven't looked at that yet, but I think you did.
Yes, I went to the app store, found that, installed it as one of the tiles because we were looking for movies near us. Now, all that Ginny has to do, if she clicked on that, you clicked on that, Ginny, it would show you the local movies. Ed?
Yeah, the one observation I wanted to make, and my father, I went to visit my father after I gave him his first, or my brother gave him his first laptop, and my poor father was still playing solitaire. And so we had to go out and buy a Hoyle game for him to play casino and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this was years ago. Now you can go into the Microsoft Play Store and they could peruse games themselves and download games, and they would show up as a tile on the desktop.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be one of the most attractive features is you won't have to go to the store to go purchase a game. You can peruse these free things that people have been playing on their phones. Now I could do that with my computer.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to love that.
What are you saying, Jen?
Yeah, I've never played a computer game. I'm sorry. I've never done that. It's not that I couldn't. It's just not a way I want to.
You represent, Ginny, my contention has been, and one of the reasons that I put you through this is that you really represent most of the people who use computers. They don't want to have or use as much as any one of us in this room would.
You know, and my wife was the same way. She did not want to play games. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And until I inadvertently downloaded a Mahjong tiles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then she
got my gosh. Yes.
That's why I'm afraid to do it. I don't want to get addicted to it.
I would find her in the room using the computer all day long.
And they're all free games, a lot of them.
Oh, yes,
you know?
Yes.
I mean, Windows tried to do this before with, gadgets, right?
Yes.
You know,
they did.
You know, it was a little hard getting those gadgets and bringing them in. But
now people are used to using stuff on their phones. It's much easier. Cal, you had something?
You know, I'm glad you said what you said, Foster, about you wanted to use someone who was a representative of most computer users. And to the plus side of it, now she's exposed to a new operating system with a whole breadth of new things for her to learn. And whenever she wants to do that, she can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it also exposes one other thing, and that is people are pretty happy with what they got already, and you know, they never have to change. But
until it breaks, right?
Yeah. So, you know, if you have to live with somebody like Foster, I guess you just have to get used to a new operating system every now and then.
Well, one thing I like is I always resented those little icons that didn't have English words to tell me what in the world they were. Now, so for instance here, I do use Word sometimes.
Okay.
But it not only has the W, but it says Microsoft Office Word. So I know, so if I want to make a document, I do that for some volunteer work that I do.
So information is very important to you.
Yep. So now these tiles, as Ginny is saying, they're telling the person more about the information that's behind them. And you can actually rename the tiles to say them whatever they want. So in other words, you can make them as descriptive as you want. The thing about these tiles, too, is you can make them bigger, smaller. And for instance, Ginny, all the ones that you access are on that left side of the tiles, right?
Yes. Yes, and they're about that I usually access.
Right.
Yes.
And how many tiles would you say are on the screen right now that you're looking at, rough?
the whole thing?
Yeah, maybe what, like two dozen?
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. About 50 altogether?
About 50 altogether. But you're only using the ones.
I don't use them all.
Exactly.
You know, I really, you know, just listening to her, it just makes me say, you know, she's a candidate for a tablet. She is a big candidate for a tablet.
Bite your tongue, Cal.
You know, I don't know.
No, you're right.
A Surface could be sitting in underneath your Christmas tree if you're really lucky. I don't know.
Well, I would be lost without my computer. I'm on Facebook probably 15 times a day. You know, so
Cal makes an interesting point. Would you find a little tablet that you could carry around with you that would have all of that information to you and all that stuff easily at your access? Would that be useful to you?
If I weren't home as much as I am, yes.
But, I mean, even in the living room, where you're not tied down to the desktop, then you could do this from wherever you were sitting? Would that be useful?
Would it suddenly stop working? Would I lose my information? I don't trust these things. I've learned to trust this one in front of me.
No,
point.
You don't.
That's
you don't
a good point.
You never have to worry about that because you're lucky to have Foster because Foster knows something called backup, and so he makes sure to keep your data safe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jen,
see that. I go to meetings, and, well, for instance, we just planned our 2013 schedule for an organization I'm in. Well, the other gals sat there with their little things, and they wrote it, and they looked and see what we did last year, and they got it all. By the time we ended the meeting, it was all typed up.
Welcome back to, I think, kind of a special edition of the Internet Advisor. It certainly is for me. Foster Brown here, along with Ed Riddell and Shane Hamlin and Cal Carson. And we're talking with somebody who is a less than technical expert. I think, Jenny Brown, you would agree that you are a less than technical expert. Am I right?
Oh, yes.
And we've been talking about what it's been like for you having Windows 8 suddenly dropped onto your computer. And to explain a little bit for folks who may be just kind of catching us right now, a week or so ago, I was given a license through Airfoil, a public relations firm for Microsoft, thank you very much, to upgrade my Windows 7 Ultimate, which is our desktop at home that Jenny has been using, to upgrade that to Windows 8 Pro. The install was pretty simple. I mean, Jenny, you weren't involved in any of that, right? You didn't hear me howling or anything like that?
Out of the room.
And I deliberately ushered her out of the room, guys, so that when she came in, I wanted to see what the experience would be like when she first saw that start screen with the blue tiles on it. From that point, Jenny, what were some of the first steps we took through with that?
Well, figuring out how I could get my Hotmail and how I could see my Facebook.
Right.
Those were the two key things.
Now, what were some of the challenges that you ran into during this first week?
It looked different. Mm-hmm. And then one of the things that happened with my Hotmail was that it was grouping them by threads rather than chronologically.
And that word thread was something you just about threads, but I mean in terms of email, that was something you just learned about, right?
Yes. I missed an important email and wrote to her and telling her I hadn't gotten anything, and then I looked and it was buried further down because they decided to group it.
Now we have to tell you guys
the they that's behind
the evil they that's behind
the
all
evil.
Computers. But what Jenny's talking about, for those of you who may not have experienced this before, is that by default the mail program on Windows 8 organizes things by threads. What that means is that I send Shane an email. He responds to me. And let's say that's going out to the three of you guys. And then Ed responds and Cal responds. And what happens is when those emails show up, they show up as part of the thread rather than showing up strictly as new emails. And so what Jenny is saying is she was missing some of those new mails because they were showing up in the threads. Now, there was an adjustment in the background, thank God, so you could change that. But out of the box, it was really confusing, right, hon?
Yes, it was confusing. Well, because I didn't even understand that. I thought, what right do they have to decide to rearrange my email?
But what Jenny is expressing, I think, guys, is what a lot of people feel when they get into a new system. Hey, you've messed with my stuff. There's a real proprietary sense that people have.
And this happens all the time as us as desktop support. We're giving someone a new computer. We've migrated their data. And what they have done is But all the default settings are completely different because of threading. Threading is a great idea.
Yep.
And it's threading, and a lot of people prefer that. So if you're the software engineer, I love threading. And,
yeah.
And they're going to make that the default, not considering what the end user would like to see.
You know, one of the other... Go ahead, Ed.
No, I was just going to say, it's like the old message boarding, you know, how it all... You know, with message boards. That's exactly how it is.
And but you've never used a message board, have you, Jenny?
No.
I've
never done that.
The predecessor to online dating.
Is there some reason I would want to do that?
No, but that's precisely the point.
Do they have recipes on there? I do print recipes.
But what the guys are saying here is kind of interesting, is that sometimes a lot of the changes that happen are because some software engineer said, you know, that'd be pretty cool. For instance, Cal, you got a kick out of this. Microsoft now has this quote-unquote natural scrolling, which is the complete reverse of what we're all used to in terms of how we've scrolled before with our mice.
Yes. But, you know, I adjusted to natural scrolling quite easily once I turned it on. And, you know, I don't know. My brain always goes like, hey, if it doesn't go up when I go up, then try going down. And I just go ahead and do it. And you just kind of, you adapt it easily. So I think natural scrolling is the way to go.
But I've heard a lot of people complaining that this was put just in the package. Boom. Like the way it was with Apple.
Right, exactly.
It came with natural scrolling on it.
Exactly. But then once again, you go into the package with an open mind. Mm. You may have a different experience.
I think I don't go into these things with an open mind. I wanted to do what I wanted to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and it seems like the older I'm becoming, the more fixed I become. I want it this way, and darn it.
Oops. Honey, I don't want to sleep on the couch again tonight. No. Well, yeah, we're all older, you know, but I think that even beyond that, Ed, I think if you've used a system for a while, all of us get used to it.
Yeah, we're all creatures of habit.
That's what it is. I think it's not necessarily age, but it's because you're creatures of habit.
Yeah. Right. This is my stuff. Where do I have my stuff? Right. Why can't I find my stuff?
Well, the other thing is, when I'm a really busy person, and when I sit down at the computer, I don't have endless time to find things and deal with it. I just want it to do what I've told it to do.
Right.
And I might have 5 minutes, and I'm not going to sit here and mess with it. It's not worth it to me.
Right.
So, you know, and I don't enjoy the fun of figuring. I mean, to me, it's not fun.
Exactly. You know, it's a nuisance.
Like, yeah, if I had a sewing machine that I couldn't make sew, no matter how many other things it could do, I would get rid of it.
You mean you wouldn't take it apart and figure out what was wrong?
No.
I don't understand that.
Excellent. Now I found out a common point here. Yeah. So a Singer Magic Touch sewing machine with all the bobbins and attachments to it don't mean anything to you when all you want to do is a basting stitch. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's it. My mother had a very old Singer machine, and when the repairman would come, he would always want to take it from her and trade it in on something modern, and she'd say, step away from my machine.
Just clean it, oil it, and give it back to me.
Can you guys hear people saying that about their computers?
Oh, sure.
Just step away from my machine.
I want to know who I'm sitting next to that knows about all this sewing stuff. Wow.
I love it. I love it when, you know, when I can get a recipe or when I can, you know, I can make it do something real quick that I want it to do. Then... And that's great, and that's what I need computers for.
Well, now, you just said something very important, honey. I think, guys, this is what is the key to the future of the user interface.
It's a tool.
If I can get it to do something very quickly, what I wanted to do, and I can get it to do simply, great. I'll let you guys who are the techs know how to do all the other stuff. Cal?
I think the bigger key, and it's the thing that you were trying to do for her more than anything else, you wanted to give her a customizable interface that matched her skill set and her desires for what she wants to do with the machine.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So you've been good at that. I don't know what I would do if you were not here. You know, I would be like my friend who says, I think my computer is somewhere in the garage. I'll have to find it.
You know? and that's right. And I think people, unfortunately, step away from the computer experience because of that. But the challenge is, the key thing is about customizing it. And that's why I like about Windows 8. Is that you have that ability to customize what you see when you get in there.
Yeah.
So that you can strip it down. You can take all those tiles off and just keep the ones on.
Well, it sounds like it's a lot easier to customize this time around.
Actually, it is. If you right-click on a tile, for instance, a little check mark comes up, and then you go to the bottom, and you can say unpin. Or you can say uninstall, and you can actually get the whole thing pulled out of your computer, or at least off the start page.
It has a simple look to it. When you look at it, it looks simple. You know, it doesn't look confusing.
Or intimidating. Exactly.
Exactly. With all these little icons that who knows what they mean. You know, I have no idea. But
honey, are you sitting in front of the computer right now?
I am sitting in front of it.
Okay. Yes. You notice that some of those tiles, and maybe you can tell the guys about that and our listeners as well, some of them are giving you information right away, aren't they? It's always refreshing.
Yes, yes. Like there's one that has things that people say on Facebook.
Yeah, right.
And it's scrolling those things. So if I see something interesting,
right,
I can boom, go back and see, oh, I want to look at that. I want to see what she said.
So it's your news feed.
In many, yes. For her social news feed. But in terms of news feed, there's another one there. I don't know if it's working right now, honey, but there was one of them that was, I think, gives literally the news.
Yeah.
It updates news headlines that are going on as well.
It says NBC News, but it's just got the Peacock on it.
Okay. There are, I don't maybe not have hooked that one up, but there are some that will give you a live news feed. There's also one for weather, right?
The weather, yeah, and that's changed a couple times since I've been sitting
here. So it'll tell you the temperature, the current temperature and things
you
like
know,
that?
It's so nice because you could have, you know, that tablet sitting there on your end table, your bed end table or in your kitchen, just sitting there, and you can just glance at it and kind of get a gist of what's going on.
Absolutely.
You know, your Facebook and the weather.
And just
the
things
just
that you want to see.
Look.
Just the things you want to see. Well, we're talking, by the way, folks, if you just kind of tuned into this, my wife Ginny is here. We're talking about Windows 8 and the experience of kind of stepping into it. Now, Ginny, was one of the areas we found some challenges in. What was that area for you that was the most confusing or difficult one to get used to?
I'm not sure what you were talking
about. Well, I'm talking about the Windows Explorer, the big the E, and getting around it. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about that, because I think that is probably one of the key areas for people who are new to Windows 8. Stick with us. We'll talk about that, because I think if you're going to get into Windows 8, you really need to understand some of the uniquenesses of the system as well. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Thank you so much, by the way, to the folks behind the glass, as we say, who make this work. Brandon, thank you so much for filling in there for Rich and Annie. Good to have you online, too. Annie Nichols is helping us produce our program as well, and appreciate all their help. And speaking of help, I want to thank my wife, Ginny Brown, for being with us. Ginny, you've been great being on here, taking the part of the common person.
Yes, computer for dummies.
You know what? I think that is unfortunate.
Computers for people with a very active life and just want to get something done really quick.
Yeah, you know, the old mantra that Steve Jobs had, the man who was the founder of Apple Computers, was, you know, it just works. That was the idea. And I think it was brilliant that he put it that way. We don't want to learn how to be computer techs, most of us. We just want to use the darn things.
Hey, that's how I earn my money.
No, but I mean, this is going to provide a rich atmosphere for folks like you guys who are computer techs, because there's a whole bunch of people with the simpler interfaces who just are going to use this, and when it breaks down, they don't want to know about climbing through all the rest of that stuff.
I think we're going to have to evolve a little bit as a tech. I think we're not just going to be the nuts and bolts kind of people. We're going to have to be more of a solutions kind of person. You know all technology, know how to utilize it for our customers and what would fit for them, you know. And all
and
I can
tailor
think
make
of,
it, yeah.
Like Cal said, I totally see Jenny with a tablet in her future. I mean, that would be perfect for her. No, really. I mean, how great would that be?
Honey, do you understand what I mean? When he says tablet, what he's saying essentially is like taking that monitor that's in front of you, essentially, and making it portable. And it would contain all of your computer there, not that big box that's on the floor. But it's all in one. As a matter
of fact, it would be about the size of Foster's LCD panel on his laptop. And that's it. Just the LCD panel.
Right.
I see people. A lot of my friends have them.
Yeah.
Or they have stuff in their phone.
Are they using them as like chopping blocks to cut onions and stuff like that?
Well, you know, it would be handy. I know. We were at book club, somebody brought up an author, and so somebody clicks and gets the author and then reads us what the author has written.
Excellent point.
Yeah, exactly.
To have that information,
I'm like, okay, I'll look that up when I get home and I get a chance, you know, but they just click and there it is.
Well, what they're talking about, too, would be, for instance, you have to go, and we have a two-room apartment, so you go into the bedroom to use your desktop, mm-hmm. little tucked away there, and you have all your stuff there. But imagine the convenience of being able to take that little tablet that Cal was talking about before, and where you work in the living room on the dining room table most of the time, you just be able to have it running there as well.
You know, there's one thing. I used to read in bed a lot. And, well, I still do read in bed a lot. And my wife would say, shut off that nightlight. Now she says, shut off that dang tablet because the light on it is so bright, you know.
Now, Ginny, one of the things I want to get to before we get to Cal as a comment as well. One of the things, there are some things we found really challenging about this new thing in terms of learning new ways of doing things. And one of the things was, I talked about the big blue E, and Shane was saying, where people, you know, talk mm-hmm. about the browsers.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that big blue E. When we try to make your way around, for instance, when you've got the page open, which is the Outlook.com page that has your mail on it, and uh-huh. you want to open up a new page, do you know how to do that? Remember how to do that?
Yeah, there's that.
Go ahead.
Well, I usually just go back to the, I push that magic button or whatever.
The Windows button.
I go back, and then I start from there again. So pretty soon I have a whole lot of stuff at the top that's open.
All right, two things she's mentioned is that she can go back with the magic button that takes her back. Mm-hmm. The Windows button will take you back to the desktop, for instance, if you've been on the desktop. Or if you go to the desktop, then you see that atmosphere you were used to before, right?
Yes.
But we've been trying to use the browser. And one of the challenges that Ginny has had was, and we went just through this today, was first of all, you don't have any of the toolbar showing mm-hmm. on there. And they've done that in order to, with because it's used on tablets as well as on like the 20-inch monitor she has, you want as much screen space as you can for the Windows page. So all of your toolbars disappear. You know where the address bar is and all the rest of that. In addition to that, for some reason, with Internet Explorer 10 that works off of the tiles, they have flipped the address bar. So instead of being on top, it's on the bottom. And the only way you can get to see it is by right-clicking the top of your screen, and then it shows up. Yeah. So this is really this is challenging,
and
isn't
it? At the bottom.
And the bottom as well, yes.
No,
right-clicking is a new experience for me. I had no idea that there was this other place or why you would want to. I've never done
But
that.
It's been one of the challenges of learning to use the new browser where she's at is that if you put the browser to the cursor to the top of the screen and right click, it reveals both the bottom address bar with your favorites as well down there.
Yeah.
And on top, you have all the other windows you've opened up. So if you have, like, this afternoon we did that, how many windows were, like, 10 windows that were open up there?
Yeah. And why is it still hanging around? I clicked away from it. It should be gone, you know. But I have to learn to work with some of those things.
Okay.
I think if I had had this from the beginning, it would have been much simpler.
But you know something? None of us have had that particular configuration from the beginning, which is part of the challenge. Well, honey, I want to thank you very much for having been with us here on the show. And I invited you on for our listeners' sake and for the people who are here because I think that Ginny's experience, my claim is that, first of all, this is the group of people who are going to be the ones that need to be convinced to use this, that it's simple, but it still gets them to the same places that they want to be. And that actually it's a fairly gentle learning curve. That you can get it to use, you know, pretty well.
Yeah, she hasn't killed you yet, so evidently it must be working pretty good.
What were you saying? Pardon me.
It's much prettier. It's much. More, it's very colorful with a lot of pretty colors.
It's like a quilt.
But you know
it's
something?
It's like a quilt. Yeah.
That's attractive. Excuse me.
It's shiny.
Yeah.
It doesn't. You couldn't say that about the Windows Explorer interface, could you?
No.
It's pretty. No. No. But
no,
this
I don't
is,
feel like I'm in an office. You know, it's very friendly.
There you go. That, I think, again, if you hear what my wife is saying here, I think it echoes a lot of what a lot, and I think the vast majority of people who use computers want. They just want something that's engageable, that looks nice, that's friendly, and gets them where they want to go quickly. Thank you very much for being here, Jen.
Okay.
Keep
bye-bye.
Keep that dinner warm for me, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to get dinner, right?
After all I put her through. No, Cal, you were going to respond to something, I think.
I mean, it's just amazing. Windows 8, great. I'm glad it's coming along. It's good to see an upgrade in that sort of situation. But the more I talk to her, mm-hmm. the more she is a Kindle Fire person.
Like a tablet kind of thing.
Surf the internet,
right.
Be able to read her email. She's in a book club. Be able to mm-hmm. read books, Oh, my God. She's like spot on for that.
That is what I think is changing. Here, Shane, you have a store, essentially, that you work with that where you sell these kind of things. Now, it's interesting to me that you said you don't see the tablets picking up that much.
No. I think tablets will do well. I think, but I see people coming in looking for laptops. Tablets are,
okay,
they're new. They're still new.
We're a small store, so we can't carry, 50 different types of tablets. Right. We've got the high-end ones and the middle ones and the lower-end ones.
Right, exactly.
But,
And I think people are going to him because they've tried the tablet, some people, and it's just not meeting all their needs, so they know they need a laptop.
There you go.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do like a 19-inch all-in-one touch screen, I think, when I'm going to put Windows 8 on it for some of my customers. I think that would be perfect for
in the
kitchen.
What would that look like? Yeah, it's 19 inches.
It's a 19-inch wide screen.
But there'll be touch screen.
It'll be touch screen. Yeah. Now, you can have a keyboard and mouse if you want, and that would be something perfect. No box, no big box, no heat element there, no heat furnace, heating up your kitchen.
Right.
It'd be perfect for a kitchen countertop.
So the question comes for us, guys. Yeah. When people call us on the air and say, what do you recommend for my next computer?
Yeah.
Sounds like we're moving in the area Mr. Baker always wanted, which is to move to the laptop to replace the desktop.
Yeah.
Well, see, I don't think it's quite that. I think it's more that now we have more choices of computing.
Good, well put.
From a tablet to a laptop to a desktop to a phone to everything. So it's just a lot of choices.
I want to thank my colleagues who have made this a great show again. That is, of course, Ed Riddell, Shane Hamlin. Thank you so much for filling in.
Love it.
And Cal Carson, good to have you back with us. Mr. Baker back next week, and we will be probably talking about this, how to buy computers and answering some of your questions as well. Want to get hold of us? We are answering emails at internetadvisor.net, or simply send your email to advisors@internetadvisor.net, and it gets to all of us, and we get those questions answered and back around to you. Thanks so much for joining us, and see you again soon.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, where since 1998, we've been helping non-geeks to find answers to their questions and to make their journey on the Internet a much more enjoyable one. If you have any questions you'd like answered directly by our team, please go to our homepage at internetadvisor.net and fill in the Contact Us forum, or join one of the forums that are there on the Internet Advisor. And don't forget, the toolkit is available with Ed's excellent advice, full of all sorts of information and free software to help you. So don't forget to visit us on Facebook and like our site so that you can catch all the news that we post there during the week. The door is always open for you at internetadvisor.net, on our Facebook page, and through Twitter. Safe surfing, and we'll see you again soon.